Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
All right, welcome to Racing Radio, Episode 1, Daytona 500 Recap. This is obviously our first episode, and it feels good. I don't know about you guys, to do podcasting for the love of the game, because now we actually work for a company, we make money and all that stuff, but we're three white guys talking about something that we enjoy as a hobby, and like that's the true down and dirty part of being a podcaster. So I'm Bobby Skinner here with Justin Penick and Kevin. What's going on, Justin?
Bobby Skinner, Kevin, Daytona Day happened. It was a day later. It didn't feel like it was a Monday. Like it felt like I was sitting down for a Sunday, watching a race on Sunday. Yeah, excited to be doing this. It's certainly a little different. My first love was NASCAR. I think Bobby, your first love was NASCAR too.
Much further before I became a football fan.
And I'll tell anybody this too. NASCAR. If you pin me in a corner, like I adored Dale Jr. more than like Eli Manning growing up. So let's talk some Daytona.
Well, we got to kick it to Kevin. Like what's your relationship with NASCAR?
Yeah, Kev.
I am you said NASCAR was your first love. You could say NASCAR is my new fling. You know, they sent us out to the Daytona 500 last year, and you know, I just felt it in my heart. And I'm trying to become a real NASCAR fan. I'm going to try and get to a level, to your guys' level. So that's kind of the angle I'm coming from. Well, and also, I would add that I was in Nashville all weekend. So if I'm like loopy or say something that doesn't make sense, I should not be held accountable.
Well, that's NASCAR.
Yeah, we got to talk about our weekends. You know, Friday night at the truck and ARCA race was fun for me. Yeah, I fell back in love with that day. Part of the reason why we're doing this podcast is NASCAR is like the nicest like sport of all time. Like just everybody there is nice to us. Like they give us tickets. Like when I was there, they're like, hey, come backstage. Let us talk with you. Like we have basically just as many connections with NASCAR as we do the NFL, if not more so. Like we have more connections within NASCAR than like me and Justin do within the Giants building, which is partly why I wanted to do
this. We were there for two weekends.
Yeah, so they've been cool to us. All right, William Byron wins the Daytona 500. And we are kind of kingmakers too at John Boy Media. I looked up a stat. So there's seven active drivers who have won a Daytona 500, not counting Jimmy Johnson because he's not full time. Four of the seven have done content with John Boy Media. We did Austin Dillon, the iRacing at the Daytona 500. Austin Sindrick did Dan on the Street in Chicago, and then Ricky Stenhouse and William Byron came on Talking Giants. Like, so we are somewhat kingmakers at for the Daytona 500, despite the fact that everybody I love wrecked this weekend, whether the truck race first wreck, my guy Jake Garcia, Harrison Burton. Every year I'm like, man, this is the year Wood Brothers gets win number 100.
Harrison Burton, let's go.
And it's like, six. Motherfucker, Harrison Burton wrecks every single week, every single time. There's nothing good to live for. Johnson got involved in that and the Chastain in the last one.
ARCA was like crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like he got hit so hard, his radiator got like ripped out of the car. And that was lap five, which we'll talk about. But William Byron wins Daytona 500 on the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports. I think ties for the most Daytona 500s with Richard Petty Enterprises. You know, Justin, he won the most races last year with six after having four his previous five seasons, led the season an average finish in 10th, like improved five. So he had like a breakout year, but we've seen guys like him have a breakout year and then it falls off, but he answers it with the Daytona 500. Do you view William Byron as like an upcoming, like a star who's going to last? Because when you look at his wins last year, they really weren't dominant. Right, they were end of Darlington, the you know Las Vegas and Phoenix being you know green white checkered. Like he didn't have those. He hasn't had like the dominant wins, and even today he wasn't like he basically won because him and Bowman wrecked everybody else.
Right, but he's had good cars, and I think as William Byron grows, and I think that's really the main thing where William Byron is still a work in progress, and I think that's the scary thing because he started off and it was like man. you know, going from Gordon in the 24 to this young kid, and there's extra pressure. I think even more pressure than the 48, to be honest with Johnson. There's more pressure being in the 24. And I think the fact that they made the transition from Gordon to another driver before they made the transition from the 48 to Bowman, I think there's more pressure on William Byron to be good in the 24 than Bowman is in the 48. And Byron didn't start out hot. And the expectation for Byron was to be, and it is to be, the superstar at Hendrick Motorsports. Like, come in here, be the young guy, be the superstar, and be what, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of be what Johnson was early on, and even be what Gordon was early on. Those are high expectations, but I guarantee you that is what they are expecting. So this kid who grew up iRacing, he didn't necessarily start with growing up with the go-karts or dirt tracks or anything like that. This kid that just grew up iRacing was this prodigy, and finally, you know, started to become that superstar last year. And it's like, you said, how can you follow that up, especially when these races aren't dominant? And I think it's really tough to be, like, flat-out dominant in today's NASCAR. Like, you'll have Martin Truex Jr. with these flat-out dominant races, and it's like, well, you don't really see that all that often, just because of how competitive it is, especially with the point system and how, you know, you can go on a hot run and a hot stretch. But great start for Byron. He's expected to be a superstar, gets his first Daytona 500, starts off that season strong.
So, like, last year he was closer to fourth than second in the Hendrick Motorsports, you know, with Larson and Elliott. And I still think Larson's clearly ahead of him as a driver. You know, long term. But he is kind of, you know, after Elliott's down year, we'll see what he does this year, like getting in there. But Elliott obviously won a bunch of races the year before, won a championship. I still want to see more, right? Because the Daytona 500, it's not about luck, but it does kind of, and again, he was like, you know, I have some other notes, like, you know, I've had four guys who were probably clearly better than him all day. And you thought that we're going to, one of those guys, we're going to win it. But again, Byron, I mean, he wrecked the rest of the field, right? Like the guys, you know, Hamlin, Kyle Busch wasn't involved in it. Logano, all essentially every single Ford was wrecked because of Alex Bowman pushing into William Byron. But credit to him, you know, like you said, answering it with a Daytona 500 victory. Because if he would have went, you know, the first 12 races without a win, it would have been like, oh, yep, last year was a fluke. You know, obviously he's going to run good in Hendrick Motorsports equipment. But it was, you know, he answers with that. Like, he's got – now can go with confidence, locked in the playoffs. And then, you know, the next three races are Atlanta, Las Vegas, and Phoenix, I think. Right, Justin?
Yep.
And he won all three of those tracks last year. Now he won them all towards the end, but still, like, he won all of those races last year.
All right, Kevin, I want to throw it to you. I mean, if you have, Bobby, any other thoughts on Byron, race winner? I mean, I guess we'll talk about the end of the race when we actually get to it, but I'm a big talking about, like, the overall product of the race. Broadcast, was the race competitive? So any other thoughts on, like, Byron specifically?
Well, the finish, what'd you think of the caution at the finish?
Kevin, what do you think of that as, like, somebody who
the finish or
yeah,
the
watch what Daytona 500s? Neither have finished at the finish line. Essentially,
right.
I was wondering, like, how common that is, because it seems like it should happen a lot, because the last lap is when people start jockeying for position. Like, what was it, like, Chastain kind of mid-gun to the front, and then he and Cindric crashed. Like, does that not happen all the time?
With the Daytona 500, where they're all close together, it's happening. It's almost becoming expected. I think three of the last four haven't finished at the finish line.
But when we were there last year, like, I had no idea what was going on, but when they said it was, like, going to overtime and, like, the music was bumping, and, like, I got fired up. Like, I liked the intensity.
Yeah, so I like the overtime too. Now, it can get, like, excessive when they just keep on doing it. But again, I want for, like, new fans, I feel like that you just got to finish it. Because, I mean, there's been 2 years in a row when the race is over and we're all asking who won, right? Yeah. Without a definitive, you're like, and both years too, like, they took the full lap and you're still like, who won? And you're listening in, and then they finally announce it. And it just makes it a little. It's just anticlimactic for what should be, like, the race that draws people in. You think of all, like, the amazing finishes at the end, but there's really just no way to fix it, because they're always going to wreck, and then they just don't – they don't race to the start-finish line anymore because they don't want cars on the track getting rammed to fucking shit because the guys are going for the lead and they're sitting there helplessly.
They are more liberal with the caution flag now, right? Like, that's a development in NASCAR.
Well, that's the thing is usually they want to get a green-white checker. So in past, they would want to – like, as soon as that Cindric and Chastain started spinning – they would just hammer that caution right there. So, like, okay, we get a green-white checker because once they take the last lap, it's over. But, I, you know, Mike Ford, who's actually a friend of ours, NASCAR Communications, basically said, like, they were hoping that they got out of the way and they could just finish that lap, but they Cindric came up on the track.
Yeah, because it was Chastain that went in the grass, so he was good. But it was Cindric that came back up. And, you know, I think if it happens maybe 3 seconds earlier, then they get the flag out before they take the white, and then it's a whole different conversation. I think it was just really bad timing. It is anticlimactic, and it absolutely sucks. Because they were going 2-3 wide. They were going 2-3 wide, and you know, you really saw the. I mean, this is even a conversation with the, you know, the pitch strategy and what was going on in the first and the second stage. You really saw how these cars are so draggy and how they involve so much of the air, and the draft is way more involved. I'm not going to say the previous years, but it's so involved, especially with this car, that they were able to move. And the fact that this race was at night too, and and even at the green flag, the track was 90 degrees. So these guys are able to move. They're able to move. It would have been an insane finish, and it sucks that gets taken away, but it was really bad timing. Remember a couple years ago where they had that line on the back straightaway? And for that stunk. Like, they had that if you cross this line with one lap to go and the caution comes out, well then the race freezes. But if you don't cross that line in the back stretch, then you get to go to the green white checker. They took that away because that rule sucked. It's they're kind of like in a no win situation with what happened there.
What I did think was good though is, like, last year when we were the Daytona 500, it was pretty boring for the first 160 laps because they were just running around. And two lines, the second line wasn't able to move. They were actually able to race 3-wide, which is like a development. I don't know if it's, you know, them getting better with the car, but like they just weren't able to race 3-wide or really pass. But we saw guys like move from the back to the front all day. And again, they were going three wide is what led to the crash with 5 laps. Now, I don't know how much of that was because they were, I don't know if you noticed this, Kevin, they were racing like 15 miles per hour slower than what they could have because they were all saving gas like through the first stage. And then finally it was good to see Blaney, but like, why the fuck am I like, why am I trying to help everyone else? And just floored it, pulled away, and then force everyone else to actually race. So they couldn't not pit at the first or before the first stage.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the downside of taking away the horsepower, is because AJ Allmendinger was by himself when he pit on his own. When he pit on his own in stage one, he's by himself and he's running faster lap times than the pack. And yeah, I would say that's one of the only downsides of taking the power away. But in every plate race, and this is even regardless of whether you have stages or not, which I know some people are really, you know, whether you're anti stages or pro stages, I actually kind of like the stages here because it does give the final couple laps. Like, all right, well, you're going to see competitive racing for a couple laps here because it's all about setting up for that final pit stop anyway. It's all about setting up for that final pit stop where if you save fuel, and you only need 5 seconds of fuel for that final pit stop, that's huge. Like, it's all about setting up for that final pit stop where you can go 30, 40 laps and then run to that sprint, and then you get that track position, right?
It would be nice if they just do this for, like, these types of tracks where it, like, lines up perfectly with the fuel stuff and they're not taking tires. But if they could just get rid of stage cautions. You can have the stages, because I like stage racing too, but get rid of the stage cautions to get the whole fuel mileage and saving type stuff. Because, I mean, they stopped doing that at road courses. Now, the first road course they did that at, it screwed them because they went green essentially the entire race and guys' arms were stuck like this. They couldn't move their arms after the race. But in the plate racing, I feel like they can get rid of the stage cautions. So they're not doing that fuel saving thing. Who did you feel like most deserved to win today, Justin, or yesterday?
I mean, it's Kyle Busch.
It felt like Kyle Busch. It felt like Kyle Busch was like all week too, right? The storyline all week was Kyle Busch was basically creating the storyline himself of like the whole 20 years of trying, 20 years of frustration, like basically trying to make himself out like, hey, this is my Dale Earnhardt 1998 year. And he was going from back to front. And then when he had the loose tire, you're like, oh, he's fucked, right? Even if he got it back around, you thought maybe he wouldn't, the car wouldn't be the same, goes to the front. But he actually saved himself and screwed himself at the end, because once he went to the back again and it was like, this is about to blow, he went to the back to avoid that wreck, which saved him and gave him a 12th place finish. But I think it stopped him from competing for the win too, because it was too little too late when they got the green with four laps to go.
But I also think it's tough because you saw how much teammates played a factor in the race. In the first stage, you had Kyle Busch competing for a stage win, but then you have four Hendrick cars in the top six that those Hendrick cars work with, you know, each other. And then, you know, Busch kind of gets screwed out of a stage win in the first stage. The second stage, he's right there to win. And then you have Byron and then you have Cindric and Blaney working together. But then Blaney eventually kind of, you know, they had like the middle lane and then the high lane. The middle lane was like the low lane, you know, they were going too wide. And then Blaney goes right underneath Cindric, kind of puts him, drops him right on top of Busch's lap. And then Blaney winds up winning that stage. And then I'm screaming to myself, man, because Busch went up, you know, like you said, he went back, you know, he went back to the front, back up to the front, to the back, back up to the front. And, you know, you kind of tweeted out at the end of stage two when he left early, because he left on the jack, but they weren't done, you know, putting the lug nuts on the front tire, the right front tire. So then he had to come back and he had to start from the rear. And then you're kind of like, ah, man, he's done. I'm like, nah, he's not done. He's moving.
Yeah, I didn't
all
think he was going to limp that thing around.
No. I'm like, I don't think he has damage. You know, these new cars aren't like the old cars where they can, you know, where, you know, if you had to drive that old car around that track, then it'd be done. So he came back up and I'm screaming to myself, there's nine to go. Screaming to myself, being like, where is he? Like 10 to go was go time, man. 10 to go.
He was waiting for that big one to happen. And I think he was waiting for it to happen with like 16 laps to go. And unfortunately for him, it happened for nine and they got the green flag of four. And you saw him try. Like he tried to start the third line, but you can't start the third line on a restart. And he ended up dropping back from like seventh to 12th at the end of it.
Yeah. But I mean, I do think number one, Austin Dillon's not very good. But then number two, you know, RCR is a two car team and Austin Dillon got involved in that wreck early on. You did see, you know, the power of the Fords up there together. Now, a lot of the Fords.
Busch was like willing himself to the lead. Like there was a time where he just jumped out past, I think it was Hamlin, and took over the lead. So like he was like, and that's where it felt like the guys who were the best were choosing to be the best. Like, no, I'm not going to try and ride around. Like Hamlin waited and then worked his way to the front. Yeah. Logano led the most laps and he was wrecked. And then even Chastain, who wasn't like dominating the race, he was in the lead because of how aggressive he was. Like he broke up that run off of the pits and then was blocking his ass off. And that saved him from the big, I mean, he missed it literally by the skin of his, like they brushed his car like from getting in that wreck, and then went for it at the end. Cindric was actually more pissed at LaJoy. You thought that he'd be pissed at Chastain, but basically Cindric was like bumping the shit out of, or LaJoy was bumping the shit out of Austin Cindric. And that gap was there, and Chastain went for it, and Cindric moved up the track at the exact same time. And that's what ended up. I wanted Chastain. Like, I was on pins and needles. Like, I really wanted that for Chastain. You know, having the year – coming off the win to end the season, the new sponsorship. Like, he's literally – to me, he is – obviously, Chase Elliott is the most popular, but I think Ross Chastain is, like, becoming the star. And if he can win a championship and have a 3 or 4 win season, like, will become the face of NASCAR. And it would have been so perfect for him to win with the Busch Light sponsor. I think it would have been like that. Let me ask you that. Do you think NASCAR would have rather had Ross Chastain win or a Hendrick guy? Not including that was, yeah.
But I get, but I mean, here's the thing.
Okay, Ross Chastain or William Byron. Let's say that. Because Chase Elliott and Larson would have obviously been bigger.
I still think Hendrick. Now, if it's, I think NASCAR needs to embrace, and they're starting to, NASCAR needs to more embrace that Ross Chastain is the villain, because right now they're embracing that Denny Hamlin is, and that kind of like doesn't. I like it. Denny Hamlin has the podcast. He talks shit. Does whatever. Like I like it, but I want Ross Chastain to be that, even without even saying anything.
Well, here's the thing: Hamlin's the villain for the fans,
right?
I mean, Chastain is relatable. Like, you know why he's my favorite race car driver? Like, I list, like, you know, you saw the wall ride, right? That Martinsville shit, right? So that gets him on your radar. And then I listened to him at the beginning of last year. I'm like, this guy's 30. He's my age. You know, he had to work his way. He didn't really have it on a silver platter like half of these drivers.
Documentary.
Yeah, he's, you know, like, he grew up in Florida, Walmart farmer, watermelon farmer. I bet you there's a few Walmart
country
farmers.
Music album name, yeah, Walmart like, farmer.
And now he's got like the Busch Light sponsor too, which is like, hey, I got to get my Busch Light Ross Chastain koozie, right? I put the magnet on my fridge last night. So I, you know, we'll do, I think we can do a little like of a preview, Justin, for like our picks for the playoffs and stuff in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted Chastain to win that for myself, because I'm a fan of Ross Chastain, but also for NASCAR, I think more so than, I mean, what do you think of William Byron's celebration, Kevin? Because I was, you see the celebrations, Daytona 500. He's like, yeah, that was cool. We won. And he just didn't give me anything.
Yeah, it did seem – I got to watch. I'm going to watch again real quick. But I think that's a product of the overtime. Like, even – like, if you're a driver in that scenario, obviously you're like – it's like the accomplishment of a lifetime winning the Daytona 500.
We're also riding around waiting for
the
result.
You cross – yeah, exactly. If you that's a different feeling than if you cross the finish line and it's like, holy fuck, I just won this. But, yeah, it, hold on. I'm trying to pull up the ending again.
Yeah, he basically, but he like he didn't usually get like at least a good audio, like Daytona 500, like even Ricky Stenhouse last year.
Yeah,
and
Bob, did you see the Netflix documentary?
Yeah, I did.
Listen,
he's a wet noodle.
A lot of these guys are a little bit of goobers, man, and that's why,
and that's why Chastain's a star, because he relates to the everyman, where a guy like William Byron doesn't.
Well, that's why I feel like a lot of, you know, I do think this sport at its best was a superstar driven sport, where it was, you know, the young kid Gordon just winning and dominating everything, and Earnhardt and his personality, and you know, Junior even had a little bit of a personality too, and you know, Johnson's dominance, and Happy Harvick back in the day, Tony Stewart. And obviously, I think it's a star driven sport, and I think that's one of the things that's been lost. Like the drivers competing, I feel like there's more drivers now that could win any race versus back in the 2000s, where it's like, I don't know if you could pick 15 different drivers to have like a realistic shot at winning a certain race. So it's, the problem isn't the competition. I think it's the level of, you know, who wants to put themselves out there, especially in a day of age where it's so easy to put yourself out there. Who wants to put yourself out there enough to be the villain, to be the good guy, to be the relatable, hardworking man, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's what, I think NASCAR is starting to lean back into it with the Netflix documentary and painting Hamlin a certain way, painting Ross Chastain a certain way. They're starting to get back into it, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's how you save the sport.
That should be homework Kevin. Watch the Netflix series on NASCAR.
I'll do that. I was gonna say I'm just excited because I'm like an experiment, because I have a blank slate for who like my guy's gonna be. So I'm excited over the course of this season to kind of decide who my guy is.
Yeah, that's actually good.
Which stars I love.
Yeah, because I root for Wood Brothers, the 21, just because they're the longest team in NASCAR. They're just easy to root for. Unfortunately, I kind of hate their driver right now. And then Ross Chastain. And then I like Zane Smith, the rookie, because I've watched him win in the Truck Series a couple times in Daytona. I mean, any other notes, Justin? We talked about Kyle Busch, Ross Chastain, Logano. I was pissed that Michael McDowell had that motor problem, because he was at the front versus the duels. Obviously,
yeah, he's a good
outside pole. He was good racing really well, and it just fell off.
I guess they don't have restrictor plates anymore. He's a good super speedway driver.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the product, because I know we talked about
the. What do you think of the Wendy's commercial, Kevin? That was 3 minutes long.
Yeah, Kevin, did you see the Wendy's skit?
I did not see the Wendy's commercial.
To that. I don't pay
attention. There's a 3-minute Wendy's commercial.
Yeah, so they went like the side by side where it's the race and then a commercial, and they just did like a 3-minute long Wendy's infomercial where they're like playing putt putt, DJ Khaled, like a normal Wendy's commercial. I mean, it was
great.
I should have pulled out my timer because I was like, I cannot believe that this is still happening.
I will the Wendy's on the infield at Daytona is one of the most magical places.
Well, they did it bigger and better this year. And we didn't get to go. I was very sad.
I have another product thing. I think we got screwed last year with the Gentleman Start Your Engines. Like, ours was just some random dude.
The Rock.
And this year they got The Rock. And obviously he killed it. Like, I wanted to see The Rock do that.
Yeah, The Rock did a good job of that. We have to, like, so part of this podcast is us finagling our way into being able to do that for like a truck series race. Like, that's my, like, the things I want to use like clout for are not this. Like, I want to do Start Your Engines at a truck race. I want to drop the puck at a minor league hockey game. And I've always said, if I ever get to throw out the first pitch at a minor league baseball game, I'm just going to fucking crow hop it over the back net. Just that's my goal. Like, the idea of wanting to, you know, pitch it down the middle. Like, the only person who should have just pitched it down the middle is George W. Bush after 9/11. He's the only person who's like, we need you to pitch it down the middle. No one else needs to pitch it down the middle. You don't get remembered that way.
I think we can get you into a wheel and modified race.
Something. Here's the thing, is my voice reflection isn't great when I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. So I would literally,
I don't know if I've ever heard you yell, Bobby. I don't know if I've ever heard you raise your voice.
So I would have to yell, but not scream. Cause when I scream at the top of my lungs, it's bad. But, you know what? I'd have to get angry, cause when I'm angry, you know, my yell sounds a lot better. So maybe someone would have to piss me off, to do so, which I was thinking about doing a pissing me off segment. What driver pissed you off?
I have one.
It's like, what really grinds.
Who's yours, Justin?
I mean, it's Brad Keselowski.
Here's where I'm going to move off you. You know who my pissing me off is? John Hunter Nemechek. He was in like two wrecks in the Xfinity, and he's out there. Now, I know it's not his first season, but it's his first season back in Cup. And they do that third line. Chastain starts it. Keselowski jumps in front of it. Okay. And then John Hunter Nemechek is like, oh, I don't know. Went back and forth, never fully committed. And then Keselowski ends up running. Like, what is Keselowski supposed to do there? That pissed me off. Like, John Hunter Nemechek, know your role. It's lap five. Like, you can't be half ass if you're going
to
commit to it.
Keselowski knows, man. He knows that you can't push in the trioval. He knows it. He did the same thing at the duel. And he did it in the two car. I like Keselowski. He is one of my favorite drivers. But he did it in the two car. He's done it in the six car. And I guess because he's the owner of the team, he doesn't have to answer to anybody. But this is, I feel like it's every year on a super speedway track where he's pushing in a spot where he's not supposed to be pushing. And then also pushing on lap six, that got me really worried because I'm thinking, shit, man, if we're gonna have like multiple big ones, or if we're gonna have like cars kind of leave the pack, and if we're only gonna have 20 cars that are left, especially if there's only 20-25 cars that are left and we're halfway in the race, then it really gets to a boring product. So I'm really glad that, all right, Brad, you know, first of all, the people that always caused the wrecks, they made it out, you know, clean. But Brad,
yeah, that was lucky that wasn't a bigger wreck than what it was.
Brad eventually got involved in his wreck, but still, that pissed me off. Lap six, that race really had the potential, if there were a couple more cautions, to really get like dicey, and the end would have been bad. Like, at least even though the ending was anticlimactic, we saw three wide racing at the end. That was awesome, that's why we wanted to see the race go to the finish, because it was awesome racing. So, credit to those drivers for keeping it together and keeping, you know, what it really ended up being is I was on the edge of, were you not on the edge of your seat? Kind of like from 20 laps to go on.
Oh,
I was
waiting
for the big one.
I was literally nervous. I was on, especially with the way Chastain was blocking. I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier. So what do you think of the crank it up for the pit stops? I like the idea. I like the effort from Fox to try something, but I would not return that. It was pretty lame.
Do you like the pit road reporting though? I think I kind of like the pit road reporting of who gets an adjustment where.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You took that away, which is like an important part of the broadcast.
This car's driver's loose. He's getting a tire pressure adjustment here, tire pressure adjustment there. So, what's the phrase I'm looking for? You got it on top of the car. Wedge. Thank you. What else? What else? What else? 41 lead changes. Yeah, I really wanted to talk about on the edge of my seat, waiting for the big one to happen at the end. Basically, the last 30 laps. A lot of comers and goers. Shout out Todd Gilliland for having a good race, and then he got wrecked. Kyle Busch is a guy I want to talk about just as the season goes on and see how he does. Because he had a couple wins last year that were kind of fugazi at some tracks that are like...
Well, he dominated Fontana, and Fontana's gone.
What track can you look at Fontana and be like, oh, that's like a playoff track that you could... Like, if you run well at Fontana, you can run well at these tracks. So we'll see how Kyle Busch does, but I have very strong opinions on him, especially like as Denny Hamlin has gotten a much bigger spotlight as the years have gone on. Ty Gibbs obviously took his job, rightfully or unrightfully so. So we'll talk.
How about on Thursday? We'll do like our playoff picks.
Oh, great! Right in a second show.
On something. We'd like to get some interviews on this show too, which I feel like we could. Obviously, we're not going to have driver interviews in season, but maybe. Friends around the sport and make some friends around the sport. But so I went on Thursday and Friday, and man, so Kevin, I went to every year I go to the truck race on Friday night, which is essentially supposed to be the shortest of the three series, but they also have this fourth series that's there. And because of the rain, they said, all right, we're doing the fourth series at 11:30 after the truck race. I'm not kidding. It did not end till 1:40 in the morning, because I mean, I actually like watching wrecks. I know everyone complains about wrecks. I was at the point of like, stop fucking wrecking, because it destroyed me. Because it was 7 hours of racing, 9 hours of drinking. Like, a 32-year-old man is not built for that. Where I was, you know, I felt like death the next morning. But it was fun, despite the fact that I mean, they wrecked they both wrecked in like the first three laps too.
It'd have been better if that happened last year when you were in the booth with Alvin Kamara.
Oh, see, could you imagine, Justin, if we were in the skybox in the suite for that? That would have been. I mean, they would have been having to
drink us for 35 cokes,
or the president of NASCAR would have had you guys.
Yeah, they would have booted had, like. I think we would have had the self awareness, like, you know, we need to leave the suite if we're gonna stay here for this.
You would have got so bored that you would have like, you know what, screw it. We are going to fight Alvin Kamara.
Yeah. So maybe we'll get Alvin Kamara on the podcast too. He's like a friend of NASCAR.
You know, and you know, Kevin, you remember Frankie Muniz, right?
Of course.
He's driving in the Xfinity series now. He's in the AAA of NASCAR.
Didn't we see him last year? Was it in Chicago?
If we have him on the show, we gotta put him in the middle of the screen.
Yeah, oh, we do. Well, yeah. Even Michael Waltrip made a joke, made it in the middle joke, dropped it right in there on the broadcast last night. So he got involved in a wreck. He wrecked very early.
Did you see Joe Exotic's lawyer is a sponsor of one of the Xfinity cars?
This I'm out on.
Well, we don't have the clip, but it was very funny.
I didn't watch the video.
So it was like, it's Joe Exotic's lawyer is one of the sponsors, and Joe Exotic like has an account that he tweets from. Obviously somebody else tweets it from him. And Joe Exotic actually liked my tweet, which was a nice, like, wow, that's cool. Basically did an interview asking about Joe Exotic, and the guy was like, asking, like, yeah, so do you, like, how involved with you guys? He's like, well, you know, I've never done meth. You know, I don't handle child. It was very nice to see a NASCAR sponsor clear up, which no one asked him if he had never done meth. But I like to support NASCAR sponsors, whether they do meth or not. That is also the goal of this show, is we need to get Jumbo Media on some type of truck, car, something like that.
Are those meth related?
Well, maybe we could sell meth. Get enough money to get a sponsor.
Can we all establish that we don't do meth? I've never done.
No, but if we sell meth, we can get enough money to have a sponsor on.
That's true. I mean, we could finally break off and form Piss Boy Media.
Yeah, Piss Boy Media. So we gotta get Jack and Zoe on the show too, and Ronnie.
Yeah.
All right, we got anything else? We went over 30 minutes, so I feel like that's good, Justin.
No, I all my notes are gone. A little bit of anticlimactic finish, but I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, the race flew by.
It did. And hey, I think that's the difference between like the Xfinity series, the truck series, and the ARCA series, is that in the Cup series, they kind of did show why they're the best drivers in the world. They kept the cars in one piece, gave us a good finish. And I would, if I had to grade it out of 10, I would give it an 8.
I would give it a 7.9. How about that?
How about that? Kevin?
All right. That's an episode.
I'll go 8-1.
8-1. We're all in the same area.
All right. That's an episode. We will see you on maybe Thursday on the next episode of Racing Radio. Until then, let's go. Let's go racing is a good thing.
Let's go racing.
It's a nice tagline. Let's go Giants. Until then, let's go racing.
Ball and Play 2 presented by DraftKings is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.